I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to the Football Ramble. Hansi Flick next to sixth and Sevilla win the Sevilla League. It's Monday the 24th of August. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
Friends, the 2019-20 men's football season is finally complete.
It is complete.
Let's go on holiday.
Well, it starts again on Saturday, doesn't it?
Oh, okay.
So, it'll have to be a quick holiday.
France and Russia have already started ages ago. I mean, that was the interesting thing about this, wasn't it? The fact that while Bayern were busy winning the Champions League, the coach who they started the season with was managing his next club in the 2021 season, because Niko Kovac was making his Ligue 1 debut with Monaco yesterday. And while his old pals, well, I think they wouldn't call him a pal, but were living it up in Lisbon, he was 2-0 down to Reims after 25 minutes at home.
He did come back though, didn't he?
Yeah, they snatched a draw. Yeah. Plucky Monaco.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness me. You love to see it. I wonder what Mbappe thought of all that. He probably was checking it on Flash Score afterwards.
Yeah, probably. So if it is genuinely the end of 2019-20, would that explain, Kate, why you left after Friday's show on an open-top bus to crowded streets in Islington?
Yeah, for all the fans that turned out, I want to say thank you.
It meant a lot to you and the club.
It meant a lot to me. It meant a lot to the Ramble, I think it's fair to say. And Andy,
you were like plucky little Monaco in a way, weren't you?
Kind of. And Andy, I just want to say, you know, thanks for being such a good sport and for turning up today. After
I left with
what
me,
was an
with me items
humiliation.
In a bin bag. Like Harry Maguire turning up for international duty. We go again.
And actually, Jim, I meant to ask, have you managed to make up with Pete yet?
Make up with Pete?
Yeah, you had your showdown, and then you had your little catch up afterwards.
You see, that would be the ultimate Luke's game, really, wouldn't it?
Mm.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I forget what Pete and I are generally beefing about. So I think it's
the list
right
is so
probably,
long.
It's probably not. It's
the
probably,
list
probably
is
some
so
issue
long.
He's got.
Very much the Nas and Jay Z of the football round.
I don't think I know what that means.
Of course not. Game was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Paris Saint-Germain, also plucky. But unfortunately, ultimately not successful in getting that first Champions League trophy.
It was... did you think it was a good game? I think so. I've seen a bit of mixed reaction to it. It was very much a sort of... it was enjoyable from a sort of tactical perspective, wasn't it? It wasn't necessarily a barn burner of a sort of spectacle. But I was just quite enjoying the way Bayern can do that, can just kind of enact a controlled demolition of an opponent that's very, very difficult to break down and that could hurt them. Because, I mean, a lot of people before the game were talking about Bayern's relatively high line and how Barcelona actually, in the early stages, managed to get a little bit of joy about them. And would they change that to accommodate PSG's front three? And obviously the danger there is that if you mix up your own game too much, then you lose sight of what it is that makes you good and you become vulnerable. But there's never a hint of that with Bayern, is there? Like, you never sense that they're ever going to sort of really miss a step.
It's funny because I think in the second half, you talked about whether it was a good game, Jim. I thought the first half was... It sort of teased a vintage final, despite there being no goals. But the problem was, after half time, that the jeopardy disappeared because Bayern stepped it up. Yeah. And Bayern swarmed all over Paris Saint-Germain. And if they swarmed over most teams like that, they'd beat them 3 or 4-0.
Yes.
Because they were really, really good in the second half. But what really struck me, what you were saying about the high line, is actually a mindset, it's not a tactic. Because if you look at the semi-final against Lyon, when they went 1-0 up through Gnabry, after which was against the run of play, after Lyon had had some good chances at the beginning, they consciously thought, right, let's wind it in, let's defend 10 yards deeper. We've had our warnings and now we want to close the door. And you think globally, they're going to take it into that game against Paris Saint-Germain, because Paris have got the players who could actually make the most of that. Mm. Players who've got the pace to beat the line, which Barcelona's didn't, and the players to actually finish those chances once they get there, which Lyon didn't. But if you look at the half chances that Paris had in the second half, it's just Bayern, because they're doing their swarming thing, it just draws them forward, isn't it? Mm. It's not a tactic always that I don't think them playing the high line. It's just the fact that we batter teams, that's what they do, and we're not going to change that. And there are a couple of, like, Alphonso Davies interceptions on the halfway line that if he didn't make them, there's no need for them to fly on the seat of their pants like that. They're 1-0 up, they're controlling the game, just close it out. That they are the least likely team in the world. Sorry, Pete, for Keegan's Newcastle of 95-96. They're the least likely team to hold it in the corner when they're... Yeah. They're 1-0 up. That's another aspect of Hansi Flick, isn't it?
Is that their supreme confidence, though? Well, it might not even cross their mind that there's danger if this doesn't go right, because they just make so few mistakes. I think there was a mistake where Kylian Mbappe had a good chance that he should absolutely have buried.
I was just about to say, was that the most egregious PSG miss of the night?
Yeah.
Because there were a few. And that, I mean, Kylian Mbappe, you know, 21 years old. He's played in pretty much everything there is to play in terms of high-level football competition. But it seemed as though he fluffed that. He could have put it... Well, look, Neuer might have saved it either way, but he could have put it many other places where it would have been more likely to go in the goal other than his hands.
Yeah. It was practically a pass back, right? I think it's just like... It's come at him too quickly, maybe, and perhaps the occasion or just Neuer's presence has got to him there. I think
he was they were very close, which is another reason to think it might have been easy to score.
Neuer has been more vintage Neuer this tournament, hasn't he, Kate? I mean, you know, we've had this discussion about the talk in Germany for a couple of years of did Ter Stegen deserve the chance in the national team? And I think he definitely has. But A, because of what happened in the quarterfinal when they came head-to-head, and there are a lot of people who don't watch Neuer or Ter Stegen on a regular basis judging them on that, and no goalkeeper's ever going to come off well after conceding 8 goals. But the fact is that Neuer has had a brilliant Final Eight tournament in Portugal. He's been vintage Neuer. And what you said, Jim, about that presence, I think that's absolutely right. But you just felt that, I think, throughout the final, that sense of the occasion getting to Paris Saint-Germain a little bit. I mean, obviously we're going to discuss Neymar because he's the only one who did what we wanted in terms of crying loads at the end of the final, because you want to see those tears on the pitch at the end of the final.
Yeah. Well, you want it to mean something to these big players as well, not just the schadenfreude of it.
Exactly. I mean, there was quite a bit of looking glum. That's not enough for me. I mean, Leandro,
and especially in the absence of fans, right? You normally you'd be able to get the cutaways to sobbing fans at various, you know, aesthetics.
Right up until the point where they see themselves on the screen.
Yeah,
it's like, look, I'm up there.
Yeah. I'm so happy now.
look at Messi and Ronaldo. Ronaldo, we've seen his tears so many times, and he really, really means it. Like after the Bayern game, Messi was like, "I'm leaving. I want to go now. I want to."
He always wants to go now, though, doesn't he? Is he playing to the crowd? Perhaps.
I don't know, but I think it's part of it, isn't it? The elite level meltdown if you haven't won, because that mentality is part of how you get there in the first place. But yeah, Mbappe looks suitably glum as well. It's a funny one, isn't it? Because as you say, I think Bayern have thrashed everyone else on the way there. PSG actually emerged with a lot of credit, which has perhaps been lost a little bit in the narrative of it, because, you know, the 8-2 against Barcelona, and obviously what they did to Chelsea and what they did to Tottenham earlier in the group stages as well, they have been absolutely ruthless. And, like, I don't know, I think PSG gave a really good count of themselves, and very unlucky with that, with maybe not taking their chances properly, because you're only going to get a few. But yeah, it just feels like it feels sort of obvious, doesn't it? Bayern are very obviously the best team in Europe, so it's a bit of a strange one. But I wonder if this will go down when the dust has settled, given the circumstances of the tournament, given the fact it's happening as late as August, over a calendar year after the season started in most places. If no fans, the kind of general kind of mental duress everybody is under, just as a human being at this point because of COVID. And I think, will people look back on this and think, actually, this might be the hardest Champions League to win ever? The circumstances are utterly, utterly unprecedented, and
The Bayern have picked up their previous form after that, I think, is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
The fact that you talk about that 30-game win, a run of having won 29 games and drawn one, like, and that straddles either side of the shutdown for the pandemic. That's absolutely extraordinary. I also think it reminded me a little bit of, you know, what Gareth Southgate said about if you can get to a final and play competently, you know, when the occasion is resting on you, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And that was a good performance from Bayern. It wasn't like a performance for the ages, but it was a good performance. It was a more than a competent performance, especially in the second half where they really took control of it. I think to play that well in a final is quite an underrated feat, because we talked about the stress of the occasion getting to players. I mean, I look at Neymar and I think, well, the pressure on him, I know he's someone who craves responsibility. He loves to heap it all on his back. But you just kind of wonder sometimes how much pressure is too much pressure. His whole time at Paris Saint-Germain has to be, right, you've come here to win the Ballon d'Or and to win us the Champions League. That is very little margin for error.
Yeah.
And you felt that he's felt that. Certainly at various stages, you look at the quarterfinal with Atalanta, where he played pretty well. Obviously, he missed a couple of chances, but he played pretty well right up until the point it gets to about 60 minutes and he thinks, oh, shit, maybe this isn't happening.
Mm.
And he starts to give the ball away a bit and he starts to chip at other players.
He got
and
the chippy bit where, at the end, didn't he? Got yellow and he was sort of slashing around at various
his head goes.
Players.
His head goes, totally.
But that, I mean, that's a massive failing, isn't it? You know,
totally.
You wouldn't, well, I was going to say you wouldn't accuse Cristiano Ronaldo of doing that, but actually you might. I mean, you know.
Not anymore, I don't
Not
think.
Anymore in the past, perhaps. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. So that's maybe just a function of the stage he's at. I know it's been bandied about a lot, but of course, you know, Neymar cost €222 million. The whole of the Bayern Munich starting 11 was 86
yeah.
million.
Which is phenomenal, given that it's Bayern Munich we're talking about. Mm. There's no sort of plucky underdog status there at all. The fact that they've managed themselves so well that they've only needed to spend that amount.
Jim, it's final. There's got to be a plucky it's underdog true. Story.
And incredibly, in this context, it is them somehow. Which is absolutely, like, we do live in upside down land, don't we?
Dortmund fans going, I feel you.
Yeah.
Yeah. A sixth Champions League title for Bayern Munich, let's not forget.
Doesn't it feels like they should have more, doesn't it? I mean, is there a... I know that's a lot, but is there a sense at Bayern that they should have won the European Cup more times, do you think?
Certainly in recent years, because if you think since 2013, they've had the highs of the football they played under Guardiola. They've had the semi-inertia or maybe even rolling backwards downhill a little bit of Ancelotti and Kovac. They've had other opportunities. But I think if you look at the whole Champions League era from like 1992, you could argue that Bayern, give or take the Real Madrid run, are the dominant club in that era. I mean, like, people might not be aware, but like, if you look at, say, just the money aspect of it in terms of prize money, television pool, etc. Bayern made more money out of the first 10 years of the Champions League than anyone else, which I think is quite astonishing, really. Mm. And they've never gone away. You know, they've never had a real fallow period in the Champions League. They're always almost there. So that spell that Juventus had at the end of the 90s under Lippi, where they were in the final three times in a row and they only won one of them and it should have been their dominant spell. That kind of dominant spell of always being a shadow over the proceedings, apart from a few, like, well, what for them would be failures, like going out in the last eight or last 16, Bayern are always there.
Yeah.
They're always there.
Okay, let's look ahead, shall we? Now, we've reflected a lot. Everyone's reflected on this Champions League final. So I wonder if we can think about what happens now for PSG, because we know that the ambition of the Qatar leaders who wanted to invest in the club is to make their brand as big as any sporting brand in the world. As big as Real Madrid, as big as, I don't know, Golden State Warriors when they're winning the NBA the whole time. Mm. They've got to a final. Yes, it's been a very difficult Champions League for anybody to win, but there's some argument that playing a single leg favours Paris Saint-Germain.
And the draws they got as well.
Oh my goodness, and the draws they got. You know, people, first-timers, Atalanta, people who haven't... Mm. RB Leipzig, who haven't been to this stage in the Champions League before.
Someone who's more nervous than us.
Yeah. Yay! With that in mind, what happens now? Because as you say, Neymar is there to win these things. Yet, perhaps it could happen next season. But does it, in your view?
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because they are such a basket case of a club in terms of what's expected of them. Because a domestic treble and a Champions League final is obviously amazing. At the moment, that will probably feel like a failure to them because of the disappointment of getting that far, losing it. But I mean, it is progress, isn't it? They had a real hoodoo in the Champions League. Like, getting to a final at all is a huge, huge step in the direction for them to actually, you know, to basically do what you're saying about Bayern, Andy, to just be there constantly and install themselves as a fixture in those last periods of it.
That's got to be the aim, hasn't it?
Yeah, because you wonder, like, if they win it, they're not just going to stop, are they? They're not just going to, like, say, all right, well, you know, we'll remove the funding now. You can just go back to being normal Paris Saint-Germain. Like, there's a permanence to this.
You say that, Jim. How long do you think Neymar's holiday would have been if they'd have won it? I say he wouldn't have come back till end of November, start of December.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Lot of Instagram.
Yeah, lot of Instagram. perhaps in some sort of local jail for a little while, as is the rage at the moment.
Oh dear. Yeah, possibly. Absolutely, definitely not. That's not what we're implying. No. But yeah, you know, the question about has always been about playing in Ligue 1. I know there's been all these jokes about Farmers League and, yeah. we've got Bundesliga and Ligue 1 represented in the Champions League final. But week to week, you know this, Andy, this is not... it's not a stretch to say that it's not a stretch for Paris Saint-Germain to win every game they want in Ligue 1.
Well, you say that. I just wonder if there's a question this season, because normally when you lose in the Champions League final, it's an incredibly traumatic moment.
Yeah.
But you have some months to get away with it and get over it, because your best players are going to reflect at a moment like that. Like your question, Kate, like, what are we doing? Where are we going? What are the prospects of us being able to go one better in the near future? So if you're Neymar, Mbappe, Verratti, despite the fact that he gets a pay rise every 6 months, you all have a look at yourselves and go, what am I doing with my career?
Yes.
Can I do this better somewhere else? Now, obviously, Paris Saint-Germain are in a position, a rare position, an almost unique position, where they don't have to sell players that they don't want to. But there's going to be that little period of unrest. And like Verratti was there before, after the remontada, where they got knocked out by Barcelona. He strongly pushed to leave, and it didn't happen in the end. But the thing is, they're playing away at Lens on Saturday.
Mm.
It's like five days' time.
That's actually where Benoit Assicotto joined Spurs from.
Is that right? I learn something from you every show, Kate.
Yes, they're busy.
But there's no time to process it. And that, I think, is a difficulty. If you were to tell me that they struggled to get going in Ligue 1 despite their brilliance, and they were third at Christmas, that would not surprise me.
Mm.
Because so much of it is about what they put in. I think you can underestimate actually how difficult it is to be expected to win and to batter teams every single week. It's tough. And there will be players who are thinking about what they do next a little bit. I mean, obviously, I think the main things are there's going to be a degree of stability because of the post-COVID transfer market, because they can't fire Thomas Tuchel because he literally can't walk out of the building at the moment.
Oh, bless him.
And
yeah, I can imagine the cool box. Clearing out his desk with a cool box.
Yeah. You know what the market's going to be like, given that Paul Pogba's agent has stated he's definitely going nowhere this summer.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
And I think really stability is the way forward for them. What worked for them this season globally is that they had quite a sensible transfer window, give or take Mauro Icardi, who's an opportunity signing, and
a mad player to leave on the bench.
Oh my goodness me!
What the hell was that about?
If you're him, do you regret signing permanently?
Given that moment came up that you were surely signed for.
Yeah, and so exactly what they needed. I mean, was what they disregarded.
I've seen the argument that he didn't play well in the quarterfinal. You don't buy Icardi to play well. You buy Icardi to score goals, and that's exactly what they needed at that moment. Yeah.
Get on to Tuchel. Come on, Russell.
You think of it. Your wife's hired a private jet to come over and see you, and you don't play a bloody minute in the Champions League final.
Oh, God, it's a sob story as old as time, isn't it?
Pastel de Natas aren't that nice, are they?
Oh, but they are.
But they are that nice.
Nice, I'm sure, indeed.
I'm sure Wanda feels like easy about it. But, of course, what they should do is be nice and stable. But I do wonder if it gets in their heads a little bit, the fact that, you know, they spend 1.4 billion on players in the last 9 years, and a guy from their academy scores the winner against them in the final. And they had this massive clear out of academy players who they didn't think were going to get. That was their way of making money last summer. So they got rid of Nkunku and Diaby and other players like that. I wonder if, like, politically, it's not a good look now.
Yeah, agreed.
So what happens? Do they make more of their academy in the future?
But that requires a lot of long-term patience. Thinking and patience, and I don't know.
When you want to get a hammer and smash everything up at the moment.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's about letting that dust settle and not making emotional decisions right away. Yeah. And briefly touching on the goal, because we haven't discussed it yet.
Kingsley Coman, yes!
It was brilliant. What a moment for him. But also, like from Thiago's pass onwards, that what a beautiful passage of play. It was so, so good. I think my favourite bit is Müller's ball back to Kimmich. Mm-hmm. Just the sort of spin he gets on it that allows, like, Kimmich has to like stop it and then like kind of chip it in that particularly like technically brilliant way that we've seen that he has in him. And I just loved it. It was just like, I could watch that goal over and over again.
He bamboozled them as well because they were standing off PSG. They were standing off him. It almost looked like a free kick. It almost looked like a dead ball situation when he took it. He stood off and just pitched it beautifully into Koeman. It was a great goal to watch.
It was. And like I think it underlined the collective as well, which is the main difference between them and Paris Saint-Germain, apart from the experience, of course. Because you think, you don't pick Koeman as the winning goal scorer in the final. You don't necessarily pick Kimmich, who normally plays in midfield now, not right back anymore, but he is because of Pavard's injury, as the assister as well. But they can create and score from anywhere. Mm. Anywhere.
Yeah. Kimmich's so reliable, isn't he? Like, he just, like, it's machine-like from him. Bayern seems so good at that. Like, having a Philipp Lahm type that you just know you can constantly depend on. And he's just another in that ilk.
He's a sexier version of Philipp Lahm. He's a much sexier version of Philipp Lahm.
Kingsley Coman, obviously, as well, the only change made by Hansi Flick for the final. Changes may be coming, though. Let's have a little glance at these. Plenty of players being linked, as of course we know transfer talk can be a bit of a, you know, fun fantasy football game for journalists.
Another little dance there.
Little dance. That was more like a
transfer dance.
Yeah, transfer dance. Sure, I've been working on it. Can you tell?
Is this a Sky thing? Are they making you dance with the transfer window now?
But they're actually getting rid of the yellow ticker and Kate's dancing every time there's a transfer now.
Yes, that would be an extraordinary thing to experience for everybody involved. Thiago is linked with Liverpool and also Chelsea. In that, there's all of those stats that you see on Twitter all the time afterwards. Statman Dave basically just ranked Thiago as being first in pretty much everything he did for the Bayern team. So presumably it would be great to see him come to the Premier League. Does it seem a bit surprising that he would be so keen to leave a side like this?
I think you look at what he's been through in terms of injuries and other stuff.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense for him to leave. I think Bayern think it makes sense for him to leave as well. I mean, they'd like to keep him, and I still wouldn't completely rule that out, especially after the glow of a final. And, you know, you talked about not getting over emotional. Well, they could go and give him a new contract. Mm. But, you know, they were keen to keep him, but not happy to bet the farm on keeping him. And if everyone's completely fit, he doesn't even start that final.
Yeah.
Pavard plays at right back and Kimmich plays in midfield, which I think is probably worth underlining. But I think, you know, with Alaba, for example, who's another player with a year left on his contract, they will do everything to keep him because he's...
With
he's
Alaba?
Because he's absolutely vital to them. So I'm pretty sure that they will come to a point where Alaba will re-sign. But I think from both sides, it really makes sense that Thiago moves on. Although when you started saying Thiago, I wondered if you meant Thiago Alcantara. Or Thiago Silva.
Sorry, I should have probably, because Thiago Silva has also been linked with
Chelsea.
Yeah,
Fiorentina. Now you see, I'm here all day for that.
Yeah,
bit of Thiago Silva, bit of Ribery in the same team.
Lovely.
Oh, finishing seventh in Serie A, living the dream. Come on.
Yeah, I'd be all over that.
Yeah, it's exciting. Now, I tell you what, we're going to head to a break in a second, but I just wanted to, I guess, an honourable mention for Ander Herrera's post-match interview. Always lovely to get the S word in there, just in the post-match. Beautiful. It was about fans. What's it like without fans, Ander? It's shit. That's what you want to hear.
Ander Herrera looks like a drawing of a child. You know that? He looks like a drawing of a child.
I'd rather look like a drawing of a child than a drawing by a child.
Who's drawn this drawing?
Like a sort of one of those street art caricaturists.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
Ander Herrera doesn't, he doesn't have any sort of like easily exaggeratable features. So this guy's been quite conservative in the drawing of the child. And that's just how that's what Ander Herrera makes me feel. So I've told the world.
Brilliant. Well, what Ander Herrera feels is that fans are the king in this sport. Football without fans is nothing. Of course, this business had to continue. Even for people who were suffering, it was a good escape for them. But let's get the bloody fans back in. That's my end to the interview. And I absolutely agree, people.
You do feel for the players as well after that, because that moment on the pitch after the game, when they're celebrating, they're making those memories, they're taking their photos, they're doing all the things that they do. Like, you do want the fans there for that, but you know it wasn't to be, was it?
It wasn't. Well, we're going to discuss another final without fans after the break, and also bring you a brand new topic.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work. How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Yes, welcome back to the Football Ramble. Jim and Andy and me in this lovely old studio of ours. Now it's time for this.
We concentrate on the topics. We're pretty good on many topics today.
Yes, after the pylon, basically, to Julian Nagelsmann's horrible suit. Sorry if you're listening, mate. We just want to know, if you could dress a manager, who would you pick and what are they wearing? So you get to pick any manager and design an outfit or suggest a style of outfit. That is what we want from you on the topics this week. I've got one from Andy Wright on Twitter. Would you like to hear it?
Mm, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, we're sort of shut in here. Yes, good. I'm glad you're enthusiastic. I choose a theme each week, says Andy. Thanks for tweeting. And every manager must wear the same outfit. Brilliant. At the end of season, an award should be given to who has looked consistently the best over the year.
I like that a lot. Mm. I think that's very much in the spirit of things. So they can do their own take on whatever that outfit is, right? As I understand it.
Or is it more like a costume you're presented, or you get to do your own flair elements?
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I guess he's saying they must wear the same outfit. So I guess maybe it has to be the exact same garment. And I suppose you're judging them as a sort of clothes horse at that point, aren't you?
Like, yeah. Okay. No, I think you must be right.
I was looking at it as like, you know, Wild West Week or, something like that. Superhero Week.
Yeah.
Although, you know, it does look a bit justice for dads. I suppose if you get to that.
Yeah.
Although, is this just for the Premier League, have we been asking? No. Yeah, presumably.
Which Premier League coach do you think would look the best in a superhero suit? I think Jurgen Klopp, just because of the way that he stands. I could see him as a Captain America or a Superman.
I actually feel like Klopp is more of a charismatic villain. It may sound controversial,
really?
But just the general look he's got, he'd be the best thing in the movie, but I don't think he's necessarily actually playing the protagonist.
I think Sean Dyche would be the most enjoyable. I think he'd really go for it. I think he's an undercover real fan of dressing up parties. Mm. I really can imagine him putting a lot of effort into masks and stuff.
I could see him as like a villain in X-Men 4 or something like that, but
I think Prohibition Week, Sean Dyche is killing that. He looked like sort of hard-boiled gumshoe. Brilliant.
Yeah, I like it.
Yes, I think it'd be great. And I think you're right, it must be about like making your own take on the choice. I mean, what I was going to say is about, you know, surely if it's just about the clothes horse element, Andrea Pirlo now is going to be a boss, so there's not really much point in running the competition.
Maybe we'll keep it Premier League then.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, he's going to win it every time.
I think it would be a good thing for Pep Guardiola, because I worry a little that he's going down the Jose Mourinho route.
You know, a bit more tracksuit-y.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, he was Stone Island when he arrived at Manchester City, and now it feels like, you know, Eminem direct jumpers, you know?
Yeah. I feel like someone dresses him, though. Similar with Nagelsmann. Like, I feel like Pep's got a stylist.
I sort of assume they all do. What's your one, Andy?
My one is from Chris Smith on email. Thank you, Chris. All managers must dress as the team mascot for at least one game of the season unannounced. They must lead the team out in full costume and not take any part of it off until the final whistle. Would you wear it early on in a competition and get it out of the way, or leave it for later and have your team have to manage your team dressed like an acrylic stuffed nightmare in a crucial fixture?
Wait, so you can still stand in the technical area and
there's not like a mystery element to it, which I thought there might be. I just think it's a good idea in theory from Chris, but I think, you know, they always have this discussion in Spain at the start of every season about if Sevilla are made to play before like 9 o'clock at night. Is that humane? I think the same thing. It's incredibly hot in those suits,
isn't it?
If you're the sort of person who has got to do it in August, I think that's brutal.
Yeah, we've seen what Pep can do to a jumper, haven't we? So he would really struggle.
But you've got the option of doing it when it's cooler. You know, so you can do it whenever you like. I think...
Oh, it's never cool to be in a mascot suit.
I think Chris is onto something here. I think most people would get it out of the way. Straight away. Just don't want to have that
first
nonsense.
One of the
first picture of the season.
Yeah.
Mikel Arteta's dressed as Gunnosaurus. He's not happy about it, but it's the rules, and that's the way football's gone for some reason in this scenario.
I
think that's fine, because like with someone like, it's like with my club, Wimbledon, we've like our last couple of managers have been like playing legends. And with Arteta, you think of him dressing up as Gunnosaurus, or, you know, Glyn Hodges dressing up as the Womble. That's fine. We know you're a club legend. I mean, the only thing that would be particularly good about Arteta, he's the least likely man to use a t-shirt cannon that I can think of. Scream if you want one at the back. Come on.
For some reason, I can't stop thinking about Nuno dressed up as a wolf.
Yeah,
I just think that would be so sweet.
That would be quite cool. But Watford would be interesting, wouldn't it? If they're carrying as they are, you've got like three or four Harry the Hornets a season. Like, because if a new manager comes in, presumably it resets, right?
Oh, difficult. Yeah, that's a real issue, probably, isn't it? That might even encourage people to Watford to stick with managers.
Can you imagine if you're the third manager of the season, how sweaty the costume would be?
Yeah, well, presumably they'd wash it, but who knows? Maybe it's a superstition thing.
Anyway, Jim, well done for not saying Jose Mourinho is a cock.
I'm disappointed I didn't, to be honest. Richard Kutcher on Twitter is rounding this off by simply saying, Big Sam in a kimono.
Short and sweet. Both the tweet and the kimono, I fear.
Stop crossing your legs, Sam.
Oh, it's Basic Instinct 3.
I like the contrast between the quite fully creative first two and the basically puerile first one.
I'm into it.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Just as a policy.
Yeah. Just round it off with a puerile one. That's what we're all about.
Yeah,
it is. That's what we like here.
Yeah, that is true.
On brand.
Well, decide if you want to be puerile or whatever the opposite of puerile is, grown up. And send us your suggestion for the topics. We'll be reading them out all week on the show. Get in touch. Email show at footballrambledaily.com or tweet us using the hashtag #RambleTopics. Thank you for all your suggestions so far. It's really nice to see you guys all getting involved. We love it. Now, let's go to the Europa League because Sevilla are champions yet again. This extraordinary ability to take a cup competition, a European Cup competition, and turn it into their playground, yeah. Their wheelhouse. This is it. This is what we do. It doesn't matter who we're up against. 3-2 against Inter.
It's like they use the Champions League as a way to qualify for the Europa League. They're playing some sort of opposite land game, and I like it.
You do wonder if Sevilla fans sort of finish second in a Champions League group, as you know, I think they've got a pretty good chance of doing in the coming season. Yeah. Fans are like, oh, shit.
Yeah, no trophy for us this year. It's a bloody trophy.
Might knock out United with our worst side for 10 years, but that's barely a consolation, is it?
But it is it's an astonishing thing. It is deliberately targeted, isn't it? Like, it's a particular aim to win the Europa League from Sevilla, which is unusual because most teams, obviously, it's the Champions League or bust, and it is very much seen as the second competition that, you know, I know some people are grateful to be there. Of course they are. But Sevilla treat this in a unique way, and it just pays dividends.
But they're a well-supported club, but they're not historically hugely successful club. And I feel that's part of it. And, you know, they've become this cusp of Champions League, Europa League, sort of fourth, fifth sort of best team in Spain over a number of years now. But they weren't always that. I mean, Sevilla were always thought of as being gritty, competitive, dare I say a little bit dirty,
yeah,
reflective of the sort of working class values of the city. And defined really by the derby with Betis. So for them to break out of that and develop, well, obviously it says a lot for Monchi's work over now two spells, but they've come an enormously long way. If you'd have told a Sevilla fan in like the year 2000, when they're getting relegated from the top flight, when Betis got relegated in the same season, okay, 20 years from now, you're not only going to be a fixture in the top flight, a fixture in the top five or six of the top flight, you're going to have won six European trophies.
Yeah.
Like, no one would have believed you. It's astonishing. And what's even more amazing is the fact that we can talk about the history in this competition. This set of players haven't done it before.
Yeah.
Nine of the starters were new this season.
This season?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you've got a coach who no one rated as a club coach in Julen Lopetegui. And that was before he got fired from Spain and Real Madrid in the space of 5 months.
Yeah. It's an amazing rebuilding job from him in terms of his reputation, isn't it? And isn't it nice as well to see a final that was actually a real cracker of a game? Because
quite
often they're really cagey, aren't they? And people play the occasion rather than the actual game. But this was all over the place.
Did you hear the BT commentary? I've just forgotten who it was, but he kept being like, what a game! Oh, goodness, what a game this is!
They were probably doing that on the touchline, though, because if you think these are safety-first sides. So we talked about, you know, the fact that sometimes nerves can inhibit an occasion. Nerves made this final.
Yeah.
Because neither of those teams, Sevilla or Inter, are comfortable playing that kind of game. They like to defend thoroughly. Inter go long for Lukaku or Lautaro. And Sevilla like to keep it tight. Now, I just do wonder with Diego Carlos, who there's been a lot of noise about, and we spoke about this on Friday, didn't we, Kate? The fact that if there was a way that Inter could maybe get at Sevilla, who are so good at defensively, Diego Carlos had not looked comfortable with the ball over the top to someone who was strong and
Lukaku
fast.
Lukaku often, yeah.
Yeah, and lo and behold, he gives away that penalty in the first 5 minutes.
And he should have been off. Do we agree?
Maybe.
Well, he was all over him and he trampled on his ankle.
And also he...
Held him across the into the penalty box.
Well, the rule there is that it's about whether or not the defender has attempted to play the ball, isn't he? And I don't really think you can argue that he did. Like, it was a straight up, like,
can
I'm
you?
Just going to foul you now.
Argue that he did.
Well, he didn't. I don't think he tried to foul him in the penalty box because, you know, you're giving away a penalty. I think he was finding him difficult to deal with. But with the final challenge, he did have a go at getting the ball. He just didn't get there.
I think Makaleli, the referee, I think he had that whole, like, I'm not sending someone off in the fifth minute in
maybe,
a final yeah. feeling.
Maybe. I think that could be it. But I think there's enough of an element of doubt that you have to be 100% sure to send them off. And I think you wonder... If there's a reason that you send him off, it's for the studs on the calf. It's not for the angle that Lukaku is, because he's still a bit wide, I think.
Lovely to see as well, Jesus Navas lifting the Europa League as the Europa League trophy as a captain after he won it age 18 with his hometown club with Sevilla.
And the way that he celebrated it as well was really emotional with the t-shirt of Antonio Puerta and Jose Antonio Reyes, who both played in the earlier ones, and in Reyes' case, in some of the latter ones of those as well, both who are no longer with us. I mean, it must have been, I don't know how you really express that, you know, two guys who were there with you at the beginning who should be there and are no longer there. It's, you know, something that really changed football in Seville as well, the death of Antonio Puerta, because I mean, he was only 22 when he passed as well, and you know, the rivalry between Sevilla and Betis that we were talking about before has always been intense, but it was just so ridiculously petty as well up until that point. They used to have, you know, fights in the director's box, arguments about who had the best car park, all that sort of stuff. But they got to this point where it shouldn't take something like this, but something like that happened, and you know, the players from both sides, you know, they live in each other's pockets. Yeah, they're close. So I think it kind of got the rivalry to a better place, because it's still intensely competitive and it's still an incredible atmosphere. But I think there was a sense of, yeah, we're being dickheads. Let's step back and respect each other. And the fans did that as well.
Yeah, that's so lovely to have that kind of context. There wasn't so much respect, perhaps, on the sidelines, as Antonio Conte was yellow carded, what, only about 17 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
After having some sort of fracas that seemed to also feature Eva Banega.
Banega can press those buttons.
I mean, asking if the wig was real, was it? Something along those lines.
Yeah,
that's
it's unusual to call it a wig at all, because we know it's a hair.
No, it's not. Right, it's just hair. It's ever. Like, what's your issue?
But I love it. That's
just expensive hair.
It undermines it so much. It's so brilliantly sort of pointed.
But how he like rubbed his head at the same time as he did. He didn't rub Antonio Conte's head, just in case you didn't see it. Eva Banega was rubbing his own head at the time. But you forget what a cheeky one Eva Banega is.
Yeah.
Speaking of Conte, we said also on Friday, you know, what happens now if Inter don't win the Europa League? And he seemed to be, I don't know, sketching out a potential exit, I thought, in the post-match.
Yeah, I don't know if you can even call that on the fence. I think that's with a foot next door, really, isn't it? And
which seems like a bloody shame, given that the number of players that they brought in for him every 5 minutes, and the potential, you know, as discussed, we want to see a Jizer race.
I agree. I mean, what could always happen is they could replace him with Max Allegri, who replaced him at Juventus, and after he went, oh, these conditions are impossible, I can't work in them, Allegri could come along, win the title and take them to the Champions League final. You know, it's happened before. But I just wonder with Conte, you know, we talked about Neymar putting himself under an extraordinary amount of pressure. I wonder if part of this is Antonio Conte in his own head, really, because in terms of the players, and he was quite clear on this when he went on this rant after the final game of the season against Atalanta in Serie A, that it's nothing to do with the activity in the transfer market, because they've given him everything he could possibly want.
Yeah,
but he's got to find something to be like on the edge about. I mean, you know, there was that story that Nicky Bandini tells about how at the end of his first season, I think it was at Juventus, when they've won the title, They're unbeaten. They're going to close it out before the final game of the season. They've already won the league and they're going to go for the unbeaten record. And Buffon just asked a question about, are we getting, when are we getting our bonuses? And Conte just cuts him down by saying, every time you open your mouth, you're a disappointment to me. And it's like,
wow,
where does that come from? And I just wonder, especially after this time when it's been a difficult time for everyone in the world, I just wonder if Conte's intensity at this point is too much. And also, at the start of the season, he will have genuinely believed that they can go and win Serie A. And because of that little bit either side of the pandemic, they didn't. And I just wonder if that's something difficult to cope with for him.
Dress him up in a baddie outfit.
Oh, God, he wouldn't be having that at all, would he?
Oh, my goodness me, I am here for that.
He already does wear a baddie outfit. Him and Diego Simeone. It's all very Reservoir Dogs, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, very much so.
I think they could have Rudy Garcia as one of the minor characters in the remake.
Well, congratulations then to Sevilla and to Bayern Munich, European champions both, and congratulations to Gus Hiddink.
Yes.
For he is the new head coach of Curaçao.
I mean, that is a touch, isn't it? That's a nice job.
73 years young, Gus. Plenty of jobs still left in him, I think. And younger than their FIFA World Ranking, which I think is 77 or 78, Curaçao. So, you know, they're pushing for World Cup action, these lads.
I mean, I do just wonder with... We talked about Gus Hiddink last week, actually, didn't we? About how he kind of got a lot of criticism for phoning in the job as the head coach of Turkey. Mm. Has he found the ideal job where he can, like... publicly give even less of a shit?
Oh, do you think that's the angle?
Maybe. Well,
the stakes are quite low, aren't they? Realistically, however good
World Cup football is not a low
bar.
Well, it is if you're not going to get there.
But if he doesn't get
there... With an attitude like that's why you've not been appointed head coach at Curaçao, Brassel.
I think if he doesn't get there with Curaçao, people will understand. Do you know what I mean? I don't think there's not much on reputationally on the line for him here, is there?
They've jumped up 100 places in the FIFA World Ranking since 2013. Can we have a bit of respect from the two of you?
No, actually. No, you can't. So there.
We've actually got quite a few fans in Curaçao. Well,
so if you think at the sort of status he has in South Korea, what does he have to do with Curaçao to get that sort of, you know, legendary sort of semi-godlike status?
You got to make some memories, haven't you? If he does manage to get them, that would be a phenomenal achievement. But even if they just do well in qualifying and he's going to have a lovely time. I'm excited for him.
He looks nice in the leisure wear as well, which is not easy when you're a gentleman of that age. I mean, I still have the image burned on my brain, and I know Marcus won't thank me for this, but of Sven-Göran Eriksson in the Côte d'Ivoire tracksuit. I mean, that's as bad as it gets, really. Yeah.
Sven's not a tracksuit man.
No, it is a bit like, it was so ill-suited to him. It was a little bit like, you know, in Pulp Fiction, where Harvey Keitel sorts out Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta because they accidentally shoot that bloke in the face and they get done up in all the geeky gear. Yeah, it was worse than that, was Sven, I thought.
I think he can pull this look off then, Gus Hiddink. That's what we reckon. It may not be obvious, he says, but it was difficult to say no. And that's the end of that for another day, guys.
Well, that was an inspiring coda to this podcast.
Back tomorrow, you and me, Andy Brassel. Do you think producer Charlie might be trying to rub a certain amount of salt into a certain Luke's game wound?
Look, as long as I can get a lift in on your open top bus, I'm cool with it.
And Jim, you're not back. You're Pete tomorrow.
Well, Pete's me. Either way.
Goodness. Can't wait, guys. See you tomorrow.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.